seems to come to me, and people gather around. They have all they can bring, and nobody will react. Other than the sound sing, the revolution starts now.
Good afternoon and welcome to Indie Media Live, one of the most progressive half hours on the radio, because we have no corporate sponsorship and no corporate control. I'm your host, Rebecca Ferris, and I'm here every Tuesday introducing you to people who are passionately involved in the issues and causes that directly affect you and your family. We have a great show for you today. Dawn Moncrief is here from A Well-Fed World. But before that, I have an important announcement for you. The United States Environmental Protection Agency is finalizing a very important and historic decision on mountaintop removal mining. And if you are a regular listener to Indie Media Live, you know that this is the destructive mining practice that is obliterating mountains and streams throughout Appalachia in order to get to the most hidden seams of coal. And you right now have a chance to make a difference in this decision. More than 2,000 miles of streams have been buried by mountaintop removal coal mining to date. The decision proposed by the Environmental Protection Agency will be progress toward making sure that the people and the wildlife of Appalachia are protected. The Environmental Protection Agency is taking comments now on compliance with the Clean Air Act. You can contact them by emailing the executive director, jackson.lisa@epa.gov, or you can give them a call, 202-272-0167. They are located at 1200 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest in Washington, 20460, the Environmental Protection Agency. You can let them know how you feel about mountaintop removal and how you feel about the enforcement of compliance with the Clean Air Act. My guest today is Dawn Moncrief. She is the founding director of awellfedworld.org. Dawn has worked in the nonprofit sector since 1994. She holds two master's degrees from George Washington University, the first in international relations with a specialization in economic development. Her focus is on the detrimental effects of intensive animal agriculture on world hunger, especially focusing on women in low-income countries. Dawn also works with groups and individuals to reduce global meat consumption as part of efforts to reduce global hunger and to reverse global warming. You can contact her at dmoncrief, M-O-N-C-R-I-E-F, at awfw.org, or you can go to their website, awellfedworld.org. Remember, if you hear anything today that Dawn and I talk about that you'd like to comment on, or you'd like to find out more about, go to our blog, indymedialive.blogspot.com, I-N-D-Y, indymedialive.blogspot.com, and you can make comments there. We'd love to hear from you. Tim, our engineer and blogmaster, is going to archive this show today there shortly after we finish today, and you'll be able to listen to the show over and over again. One of my personal heroes is here, Dawn Moncrief, the founding director of A Well-Fed World. Dawn, thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Rebecca. I'm glad to be here.
I know that you are just crazy busy packing and everything because you're on your way day after tomorrow to Cancun for the United Nations Climate Change Conference.
I am, and everybody is jealous about Cancun, but I tell them it's a work conference, so no pina coladas on the beach. It's a very important conference, and we're going to be there as part of the official delegation Brighter Green, which also includes the International Fund for Africa and the Physicians Society for Responsible Medicine. It's a great group, and we're going to be doing a lot of good there.
Can you tell our listeners something about the agenda of the United Nations Climate Change Conference and then how Brighter Green delegation is going to fit into that?
Well, it's varied. The Climate Change Conference has all kinds of subsections that address climate change. We're going to be focusing on the agricultural aspect, and Saturday has a particular session that is also divided into subsections, and we'll be working on that. Particularly, we'll be attending the one on reforestation, and this is one of the reasons we need to be there, is because they recognize the importance of reforestation when dealing with climate change and reducing greenhouse gases. Obviously, the more trees we have, the better, but what they want to do is intensify agriculture to make more room for reforestation. And it's a backwards way of thinking about that, because livestock are the number one contributors to greenhouse gases and global warming. And rainforests, and forests more generally, are being cleared for grazing to make more meat, because meat consumption is doubling in 50 years. And we can talk more about that later. So instead of looking to reverse that trend and reduce consumption, they're looking to intensify both animal agriculture and plant agriculture, so creating more monocrops and more monocultures. And it's a very scary backwards way of thinking about things. And there's a lot of great NGOs, non-governmental organizations, which are international nonprofits, working to get some better ideas on the table.
Are there going to be some shadow conferences going on at the same time, do you think?
Yes. CLIMA Forum is a shadow conference that follows the UN climate talks. They shift around them. Most people will be familiar with Copenhagen, which is the last one. So this is a follow-up. These are a series of conferences. And CLIMA Forum, which is spelled with a K, is a shadow conference with all kinds of NGOs and that follow it and also discuss better options. So we'll be attending that as well, not quite as official as obviously the United Nations official conference.
Dawn, there is so much concern these days about climate change, but sometimes the problem seems so large that maybe one person or one family may not really understand how they might contribute to the solution. I know that you said that livestock raised for food is the number one cause of greenhouse gas emissions. Could you talk to us about that?
Well, the upside of that is that we do have the power to create a bigger change than a lot of people originally understood. So it's not just about driving less and changing your light bulbs. Diet change is something we can do every day at every meal to reduce our impact on global warming and to reverse that. So we have a lot of information online about ways to do that. We talk about flexitarianism, which is reducing meat consumption, and also ways of avoiding animal products, minimizing meat. But the reason that it's more powerful is because of the methane. Livestock produce methane, which is 23 to 74 times more powerful than carbon dioxide when it comes to global warming. So by reducing our animal consumption, especially in America and Europe, where we have the highest per capita consumption, it's excessive, and we're dying of cancer, stroke, and all kinds of diseases that are related to diet. It's the number one thing that we can do to reduce our impact, and it also takes place much quicker than when we're working with carbon dioxide.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Indie Media Live on WRIR. I'm your host, Rebecca Ferris, and I'm talking with Dawn Moncrief, the founding director of a wellfedworld.org. Dawn, I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about a well-fed world.
Sure. I've been on your show before when I was part of FARM, and that's an animal protection organization at farmusa.org. And we were working on these issues, but from leading with an animal perspective. And as executive director there, I was there for 8 years, we started the global warming and global hunger campaigns, which are my specialty. And then I have spun them off in this past year so that we're our own distinct organization. And that way we can focus on the health, hunger, and environmental benefits of reducing meat consumption, as well as greening diets more generally. So it's really focused on greening diets and the benefits, again, to health, global hunger, and environment.
On your website, you have listed the top 12 ways that people can green their diets. Could you talk to us about that a little bit?
Sure. This is a fun way to just have in your head the ways in which we can make a big difference with our diet. So it's not just about eating less meat, though that is the number one issue that we address and the number one thing people can do. But we talk about use of leftovers, eating whole foods over processed foods because that is much less energy. Of course, there's a lot of information these days on local eating and supporting sustainability and also seasonal eating, things of that nature. We have a little brief thing on fair trade as well, and also things like color your choices, so eating a variety of fruits and vegetables, again, whole foods, not juice, not packaged, not dried, and avoiding junk food. I call it dental on the junk, because, again, those are not foods that nourish us, and so it takes a lot of energy and resources to produce these junk foods, and they're not helping us with our health, and they're actually destructive to our health. And then, you know, then we're in the healthcare system, and that's using energy and resources to make us healthy again.
Dawn, you mentioned fair trade. Could you help our listeners understand what you mean by that term?
Well, it starts getting a lot more complicated when we talk about these things, but there are policies that hurt the lower-income countries and those who don't have resources, and so fair trade is a way of making sure when we're working with these smaller groups, these low-income countries, that we're not exploiting them, that they're getting fair prices for the products that we're taking into the U.S.
Now, I know that one of your interests is women's studies, and can you talk to us a little bit about world hunger, fair trade, and women in these low-income countries?
Well, my master's thesis was on global hunger, and particularly women in low-income countries, and how both issues are hurt by animal agriculture, especially intensive animal agriculture, which is factory farming. So originally, I was working on global hunger issues, international relations issues. Those were my graduate degrees. And like most people, I didn't understand. I thought, well, you know, the poorest people of the world need to eat meat. And I didn't understand that actually the system of meat production hurts the poorest of the poor, because the food that they do have, in many cases, is exported for animal feed to create meat and other animal products for the wealthier countries. Animal products are very inefficient. It takes a lot more food resources as well as energy and resources to create meat, and so it actually pulls those resources from the poorest of the poor to create meat for the wealthier. And one way to understand that also, because a lot of people think, well, it's distribution, not supply. But if we think about the supply and demand and how that works, and we just saw that with the biofuels crisis, because with biofuels it was using up more of the basic food crops and increasing the price. Meat does that on such a grand scale, and it's been happening, you know, for so long that we don't even think about it in those terms. But because meat is so resource intensive, it puts pressure on that system, and it makes those basic food staples higher in price so that the poorest of the poor can't access them. And it's bid away by the wealthier countries for food, for animals to create meat. So it's not too complicated, but it's a little complicated to address just in a few minutes on the radio. But we do have detailed information on the website that goes into the supply and demand and the ways in which excessive meat consumption, particularly in the U.S. and Europe, does increase hunger and especially affects women. Because women, anytime there's disparities in food and power, women are going to be hurt more by that. So women and girls are the majority of the hungry in the world.
Can you give us a couple of examples of the kinds of energy resources you're talking about? I know that a couple of weeks ago we were talking with Dr. Karen Davis from United Poultry Concerns, and she shared with us that it takes 80 pounds of grain to run through the body of a hapless turkey to create 20 pounds of its flesh. Could you give us a couple of examples of that kind of use of resources that you say is not sustainable?
Well, the most common one is for beef, which is 16-to-1 ratio. And that actually, there's a lot of ways those numbers can be tweaked. So you'll see the livestock industry will say 7, but we've heard other arguments that will double that because it doesn't account for the water weight. Those numbers also don't count for the animals who die as they're being transported or for other reasons. So the energy numbers are very extreme. It's less for pigs, which tends to be 7-to-1, and then the poultry, which is 2 or 4-to-1. But the thing is, when you're talking about global warming, all the animals produce the same amount of proportionate greenhouse gases because it's by weight. So even though you might get more, quote, economies of scale by eating fewer animal products, or I mean smaller animals, you're not helping with the greenhouse gases. And what's also happening then is when you switch to the smaller animals, more animals are suffering. So a lot of people, when they want to eat less meat and they do it for animal reasons, switch from cows and pigs to chickens, which Dr. Davis probably referred to. But then what's happening is you're eating many more animals. So from an animal perspective, there's a lot more suffering going on.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Indie Media Live, and this is Rebecca Ferris. I'm talking with Dawn Moncrief, the founding director of awellfedworld.org. Remember that if you hear anything today that you'd like to comment on, you can go to our blog, indiemedialive.blogspot.com, and we'll have information about Dawn and A Well Fed World, awellfedworld.org, on the blog, and we'd love to hear from you. Dawn, I am looking at your website as well, and it has an interesting link to grant programs. What is that all about?
Well, we were very fortunate to have a grant designated for grants. So even though we are a new, young organization and can take donations and need donations for our general programs, we do have money designated for grants. And this can be for individuals or groups. And you can see information online about how to get a grant, grants that have been distributed, as well as for your wealthier listeners, how to give a grant. But it doesn't even have to be wealthy listeners, because donations are pooled. But most important, it's about getting a grant or seeing all the great organizations that we've been able to help. And one of the things that I would want to focus on is that you do not have to actually be a 501c3, and you can be an individual with a project. So that's very important for a lot of people who don't have access to funds. And we support youth programs, research programs, outreach programs. We also have people who need some support for printing. So if they've got some materials, as well as online advocacy and animal sanctuary. So we've got a huge range. And again, one of the folks is trying to get financial assistance to those who don't otherwise have it. So we really focus on low-income countries and small groups, things of that nature.
Dawn, a little while ago, I'd like to switch gears. A few minutes ago, you talked about meat consumption doubling.
Yes, so that is based on the United Nations 2006 report, and they discussed that over 50 years, meat is set to double. So that's 2000 to 2050. In 2000, we had 50 billion animals a year being slaughtered for food, and that's globally. And So if that doubles over 50 years, you're talking about $100 billion. And we're in 2010, we're at $58 billion, so we are seeing that huge increase. So when we talk about reducing meat consumption, reducing the excessive meat consumption, especially in the U.S. and Europe, that is not just reducing our current consumption. We're really talking about trying to reverse this drastic, unprecedented trend. Now, where that consumption increase is coming from is actually the low and middle income countries, emerging economies, as they become better off in financial terms, people eat more meat. And so they're emulating the Western wealthy styles of food consumption, even though it's excessive and we're having a lot of health detriments because of that. But what you have is a very large population base. About half the world would be fit into that category, and then eating more resource-intensive animals and having a larger birth rate, so higher population growth. So what happens is that the organizations focus on what are we going to do, how do we meet this demand, it's very destructive, we don't have the resources, but they don't want to say reduce consumption. So they say it's demand-driven, and we have to figure out how to meet that demand. We can't reduce the consumption, which of course is ridiculous because subsidies supported education programs can reverse that trend, and it's critical that we do so. And you don't see organizations talking about that. So there is attention being paid to the issues of diet change, but not so much the drastic increases that are already happening. And again, the details of that are on our website at awfw.org, or you can spell it out. Either way works.
awellfedworld.org. Dawn, I have wondered about this so much. Why do you think this is so? Why do you think that people are not talking about less meat and dairy?
It's very entrenched in our culture. People are very individually impacted by it. It's one thing to talk about what people should do in these other countries, how we need to control their birth rates. There's a lot of blaming, saying, oh, we have to watch all this meat consumption grow and we do something about that, without looking at ourselves and personally taking responsibility for the U.S.'s consumption, which is the greatest consumption per capita in the world. So we need to work on ourselves as well, and it's very difficult, as well as, you know, there's lots of investments and entrenched interest on the governmental side. So lots of big agribusiness money, lobbying, things of that nature going on and the government side of things to keep them away from focusing on reduced meat consumption. Though you do see, I mean, Meatless Mondays is extremely popular now. There's all kinds of Meatless Monday campaigns that are told. So there is more attention being paid to it, just not enough.
If you've just tuned in, this is Indie Media Live, and I'm talking with Dawn Moncrief, the founding director of A Well-Fed World. Dawn, what is your story? What is your journey? What has brought you to this work? I know that you are so dedicated, and as we said in our introduction, you have been working in the nonprofit sector since 1994. I'm wondering if you would share with our listeners a little bit of your story.
Sure. We touched on it earlier. I was in grad school working on my first master's degree for international relations, and I was very concerned about global hunger. I still am. That was my primary focus. And I had already been vegetarian since I was a teenager because I was concerned about animals. But I didn't think that, you know, I could tell poor people, you know, they need to eat meat. You know, I wouldn't want to focus on that. And actually, I still don't. The organization does not focus on subsistence farming and things of that nature. So we don't, but we focus on those that are excessive. So the wealthier countries that are excessive in meat consumption. But when I was in grad school, I learned about how resource-intensive meat was and how it pulls foods from the poorest of the poor, about the environmental destruction. And so then it all fit together. And that my concerns for women, my concerns for global hunger, for health, the environment, for the animals, it all came down to reducing global meat consumption, promoting, avoiding animal products, minimizing meat, vegetarianism, veganism, however far people are willing to go, that it has all these benefits, and not enough organizations and governments are talking about that. So you hear from it from the animal and vegetarian groups, but not enough from the environmental and hunger groups. You hear from it some. So a lot of the big environmental organizations will touch on reducing meat consumption or going vegetarian for a day or completely, but they don't give enough attention to it, considering how the weight is. So it just all came together, and that's how it became my life's mission. It was really fantastic because there's no ambiguity there. You know, lots of things are like, oh, well, this, but there's a trade-off here, and there's no trade-off. There's a little bit of a convenience trade-off, but it's so worth it just to know that, you know, that I can do that personally for myself, and that I can help others do more about what we want to do to align our values and our actions.
So, Dawn Moncrief, any final thoughts before we close today?
Yeah, I would just encourage people to visit our website. We've addressed a lot of complicated issues with global hunger, global warming. All these issues are addressed in detail and with additional resources on our website at awfw.org. But we also have fun stuff. You know, we have the 12 ways to eat green. We have a whole bunch of flexitarian ways of helping, and that's from things like using meat as a side dish instead of a main dish, picking a day to be vegetarian or days, like we were talking about the meat out Mondays and meatless Mondays. Some people pick a meal, say breakfast or lunch. Some people, when they have visitors, they are not vegetarian, but they're vegetarian other times, or dining in or dining out. And just a lot of ways to make it fun. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. And people should not think that, well, if we can't do everything, we don't want to do anything. Because the more people who do something, the better. And the organization is specifically designed to be very positive and accessible. We have a fun e-newsletter that goes out. So I'd hope that your listeners would come on and sign up for our e-newsletter. We only send it out 4 times a year, so it's quarterly. We know how busy everyone is. We won't spam you with emails every week. And it's a lot of fun. We have an online store that has fun stuff, and we have ways of getting active, so we can send free materials to those of you who are interested in spreading the word in your community. You can leave them at bookstores or, you know, progressive locations around your area, doctor's offices, vets, things of that nature. So there's a lot we can do as individuals, our own changes, but then also being examples for others, as well as providing some type of outreach within our community. So lots we can do, and we're here to help. And like I said, it's not all about doom and gloom. There's a lot of fun stuff and just feeling good about making a positive change in the world. So, keeps our spirits high.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for taking the time. And thank you for helping all of us make the connection between our food choices and the health of the planet. Dawn Moncrief, if you heard anything today that you'd like to comment on, you can go to our blog, indymedialive.blogspot.com. That's I-N-D-Y, Indie Media Live. On behalf of Tim, my engineer extraordinaire and blogmaster, and Jesse in the booth, and all the other awesome volunteers at WRIR who make Indie Media Live possible, thank you for listening today. Until next week, be kind to yourselves, be kind to each other, be kind to the animals and to the planet, but don't be silent, because silence is the voice of complicity. We wish you and the whole world peace.